Hello, welcome to Avebury in Wiltshire, England, one of the great stone circles of the world on this windy but beautiful May Day. Circles like this were erected on major vortex points by people, as I'll come to more shortly, by people who understood the nature of ley lines, the nature of vortices, the nature of energetic reality. And this is the knowledge that's been lost and the knowledge that is now returning fast. Places like Avebury and all these great stone circles and great structures all over the world. Stonehenge, of course, just down the road from here, but all over the world you find them. There are amazing structures built, it is said, at a time when people were primitive. What conventional history doesn't acknowledge is that there were two distinct levels of knowledge in the ancient world. There was the mass of the people, and then there were the priestly class and those that were connected to the extraterrestrial gods, who had a level of knowledge that was far in advance of what we see in the public arena today. And this explains why vast stones, sometimes hundreds of tons, in terms of a place at Baalbek in the Lebanon, 1,000 tons of stone were moved and put into place. That's how the pyramids were built, because as we're seeing now, the technology, the knowledge has produced the technology to throw magnetic fields around heavy objects and make them float. If you look at these trains, magnetic trains that fly along at enormous speed, hovering on these magnetic fields, it's the same basic principle. You try picking up that train, no chance, but the magnetic field can hold it above the ground. These are the principles that were known by the high initiates of the ancients and the gods, as they perceive them, the extraterrestrials, that were able to build these fantastic structures in times when apparently there were only primitive people. And this is before they built a village and put a road through it. This is the biggest stone circle in the world, I understand. Okay, we've got a member of the Skeptic Society over here. Sorry about that. And there's a few Bush supporters as well over there. Look, there you go. Vote Bush. There you go. Everything the government tells you is true. Great. And what they used, because they had a knowledge of how things work, they used rock that had a crystalline structure, quartz crystal. And as I pointed out in my last book, and I go into in more detail in the next one, it's out shortly, the human body is also a crystalline structure. And what do we use crystals for? We use them for transmission and receiving. We use them in radios, etc. And this place, this great stone circle, Avebury and others, part of what they were transmitter receivers of information, of knowledge, of higher levels of awareness. And they were built at vortex points. So here's another lovely shaped stone, this. God. Oh, hello. Vote for Hillary. I love sheep, mate. Lovely, lovely animals. It's the human variety that give me a problem. I know, I agree. The other reason that they built stone circles, and in the places they did, was they were built at vortex points. And if you have ley lines, energy lines, meridian lines, whatever you want to call them, where they cross, where a couple cross, you have a small vortex. Where many cross, you have a massive vortex of energy. And that's what we have here at Avebury. And what they've done is they've built a road through it, and they've built a village in it. But every time a car, a bus, or a truck goes through that road, it is an electromagnetic field going through this vortex. And, of course, it has a detrimental effect on it. Whether that's an accident or by design, we can debate, but the effect is very clear. So this is not as powerful as it used to be, but it's still a very, very powerful place. And what we have in the human body, in the on the energetic level, are what are called chakras, a Sanskrit word meaning wheels of light. These are these vortices that we have, like in the throat chakra and the third eye chakra, where we connect into psychic sight, and the crown chakra, which again is a great connector to the great beyond. And we have these main seven chakras, and there are many others. And what these vortices do within the body is they interpenetrate different levels of our consciousness, different multi-levels of our being. Now, exactly the same principle happens with the Earth at places like Avebury. So because it's a vortex that interpenetrates other dimensions, what it means is that you can move between dimensions if you know what you're doing. At places like this, they're like interdimensional gateways and doorways, but unless you know what you're doing, then those doorways are closed. The access keys are the knowledge of how to open the vortex so that you can move between dimensions. And in the ancient times, this high priestly class knew the access keys, and that knowledge was sucked out of the public arena, not least by inquisitions and the use of Christianity and other religions, and it's been passed on through the highest levels of the secret society network. And that's why those manipulating society are in receipt of a much greater knowledge of the nature of reality and what's possible than the general population, and that puts them in a significant position of advantage and power over the mass of the people. And what we're trying to do is bring this knowledge back into the public arena, so that advantage, that domination through knowledge and ignorance, is removed as much as possible. And people are now starting to come back to these places. People who would have dismissed them a few years ago and said, it's all a load of nonsense and all the rest of it, they're now beginning to understand what these places are. And at the cutting edge of science, where open minds are more likely to be found within the scientific establishment, they too are beginning to see that the ancients were nothing like as stupid as we thought they were. Well, I'll stand next to this stone see if I can keep out of the wind with a microphone and everything. Apologies if it's a bit windy, not what we can do. But what I've been asked to talk about this time is the whole reptilian thing, which is something I've become attached to and known for, if you like. And it wasn't something I went looking for. I have a simple philosophy. I go where the information takes me, and I don't have a belief system that filters out where it takes me. If it takes me into an area where what I thought before is going to be changed, then let's do it. The interest I have is what's going on, not some belief system. I want to make everything fit to make protect the belief system. But what happened was, during the 1990s, I started coming across, particularly from about 98, funnily enough, a series of people, as I traveled around the United States, first of all, different parts of the United States. And in a 15-day period, I met 12 different people who had had this same experience that they talked about seeing someone change into a reptilian form and then go back again. And of course, you hear one or two of these things and you go, what? And then you hear more and more and more. And over the years since, I've met and heard the accounts of endless numbers of people in every walk of life you can imagine, who've had this experience. And to an extent, I've had it, not shape-shifting into a reptilian form, but I've seen eyes change very, very much from what we would call the human eyes. So the question then was, what's going on? So I started, again, in a very synchronistic way, coming across other information and meeting other people, like Credo Mutwa, the Zulu shaman in South Africa, who called me when I was out there after The Biggest Secret came out, where I talked about this reptilian thing for the first time. And he called me and said, I want to talk to you because how do you know about the Chitahuri? And the Chitahuri, it turned out, in African law and ancient accounts were a reptilian race that interbred with humans and created a hybrid race. And Chitahori means children of the serpent or children of the python. When you then start looking at other ancient accounts in apparently unconnected parts of the world from South Africa, you find the same recurring story. Then more and more, I was meeting more and more of these people today who'd had this experience. And so when you start putting the ancient experience with the modern experience, and then I started coming across people who'd been involved in satanic rituals and that sort of stuff, and they were saying how they'd seen people in the rituals change from a human form into a reptilian form. I remember talking once to a lady in America who ran an organization that was not into any of this reptilian stuff. It was just an organization that was created to help those people who were trying to overcome the effects of being abused in satanic ritual, etc., as children. And in the middle of our conversation, which was nothing to do with reptilians, she said to me, "Can you answer me a question? I don't understand." She said, "Why do so many of my clients or the people I'm trying to help, why do they keep telling me about seeing the participants change into reptiles?" She said, "Do you think they're dressing up to confuse them?" So by this time, there was a body of evidence that there was a direction which was leading to a very clear theme, which was that there was something to look at here in terms of there being a reptilian dimension to this manipulation. Because another thing that kept coming up, not always, but often, the accounts of people who'd seen someone change into a reptilian form and then go back again, over and over, it was the kind of people, like Father George Bush, that I had been exposing in my earlier books. And another man who I was told by someone who had experienced this man shapeshift was a man called Ted Heath, the former Prime Minister of Britain between 70 and 74. This is the man who signed the UK into what is now the European Union. And he's dead now, very much involved in this conspiracy to centralise power and centralise control. And I had an experience with him in a television studio before I was into any of this stuff. I was in a makeup room, and I was led into this makeup room to have makeup put on to go in and be interviewed when I was around the Green Party in the 1980s. And he was sitting there waiting for his taken off because he'd just come out of the studio after being interviewed. And the lady led me into this makeup room, and I walked in and the door was open. And I thought I was alone, and she just said to me, "Okay, someone will be along in a minute," and walked out. And I sat down and I turned and looked to my right. And there, sitting behind the door, was this guy, Ted Heath. This is in 1989. And, he's a well-known Prime Minister, and you know what you do. "Hello, mate, how you doing? All right?" Well, this guy never acknowledged me in any way. He was just facing the mirror, and then he just turned slowly and looked at me. Not a word spoken. Then his eyes started at the top of my head, and slowly went down to my feet. And all I can say looking back is that he was scanning me. And while he was doing this, his eyes went completely black. And there were no whites, nothing, just completely black. And later I came across people in different parts of the world who talked to me about the black-eyed people, or the black-eyed people who with whom they'd had this same experience. And then when this was over, he turned back, Ted Heath, and he looked at the screen and never acknowledged me, not a word spoken. Very strange experience, which I didn't understand until I started getting into all this stuff. So how does this all come together? These reptilian entities, they do take what we call a physical form, some of them. But mostly, the key ones that are behind this manipulation operate just outside the frequency range of human sight. They, in the ancient word that we've, or theme that we've heard all the way through history right up to the present day, they possess human bodies in this physical reality, and they take over their mental and emotional processes of thought and therefore behavior. Where the bloodline comes into all this is that there was this interbreeding, and I'm sure it continues, between these reptilian entities and human women, which produced this hybrid race. Now, what is this hybrid race? It is a DNA, which is like a computer code or a vibrational code, and it contains the codes of both the human form and the reptilian form. And what it does, it allows a vibrational compatibility between the reptilian entity just outside of human sight and the human form that they're possessing. In other words, there is a sympathetic resonance which allows those particular bloodlines to be possessed and taken over far more easily than the general run of the population who do not have that vibrational code, that hybrid code. And so, in simple terms, if they can manipulate these particular bloodlines and hold that bloodline by fierce interbreeding, which is what they do, then when those bloodlines are put into positions of power, so in effect, these other dimensional reptilians are put into those positions of power. And so when you look at apparently unconnected, even opposing countries in the movie that we're told that the world, how the world works, in China, America, Britain, elsewhere, what you're looking at is the same tribe being manipulated into power to play this game, which convinces most of the population that there are basically different sides and there are different agendas and all that stuff. Yes, there is a battle for power within this reptilian group and this reptilian hybrid group because of the nature of their attitude to life. You know, they don't just want power over the population of the earth, they want power over each other as well. So there is this conflict and this competition, but they're agreed on the same agenda, which is control of planet Earth. So that's some of the basic background. If I get my glasses out now, I'll go through some of the questions from people who've sent them in through the website, the forum. And a lot of them this time relate to the whole reptilian thing. Here, let me see where we are. Who controls the reptilians? Who controls the controllers of the reptilians? Well, we live in a multidimensional reality. This is just one television station in infinite numbers of television stations that interpenetrate the same space. When we enter what we call physical form, this computer, this body computer, tunes us into a certain range of frequencies. So when we look through the eyes of this computer, what we see is that range of frequencies that this is tuned to. It locks us into this reality. Some people who have opened themselves to a greater amount of their consciousness, they can also be very sensitive to other dimensions, other levels of reality. But most people, not least because of the way this reality is manipulated and we're encouraged from cradle to grave through the education system and the media, etc., to only operate in this wavelength, most of us look around and we think this is all there is. But like I say, sharing the same space as this are all the other levels. Now, who controls the reptilians? I don't know that, but for sure something does, because the reptilians are another computer level of this interdimensional reality. For me, when you look at their traits and the traits of the people in power who are these reptilian hybrids, they operate in a very computer-like way. They're very, very predictable. If you put data into a computer and press enter, unless it's a computer that they're developing now that can think for itself, what they call biological computers, if it's a regular computer, you know what the response is going to be from the computer. Input, enter, you know what the outcome is going to be. And with these reptilians, when you study their behavior, they operate in exactly the same way. They're incredibly ritualistic to the point where your jaw drops, where they do the same things at the same time every year. They wear certain colors on certain days. and they're extremely predictable in their behavior and the way they do things because they're incredibly computer-like. And a computer can be extremely impressive. I mean, it can work things out on a human conscious level anyway, much quicker than we can in terms of data and maths and all this stuff. And these reptilian hybrids and their reptilian masters are extremely intellectually sharp. I mean, you can only describe the way they've stitched up this this world and billions of people as genius. But it's operating on a computer level. So then comes the question, who controls that computer? The computer that's being used to control us? Who knows? But in the end, it's going to be a form of consciousness, which is, if you like, the computer programmer. And the reptilians are a vehicle to control. I don't believe, the more I research this, that they are the controllers in themselves, although at the level they operate, they almost certainly believe they are. Do you think when people shapeshift, it's their three-dimensional form that moves, or do you think it's our perception of the way they look that makes it look like they move and change? That's a first-class question, because, of course, one of the challenges of what I do is explaining things to people who are still stuck in the fact that this is all solid. If you come from that perspective, then shapeshifting's impossible. If you come from the point of view that when you talk about moving from one form to another, you're talking about physical bodies shifting to another physical body and then back again. Well, of course, that's ludicrous. And people dismiss it at that level, and I understand why completely, because we are programmed through our lives to see the world in terms of solidity. And so the challenge to get across what's going on is to research so many different areas and connect the dots before the apparently bizarre and impossible becomes logical. So this reality is not physical, it just appears to be. The only place where this apparently three-dimensional world exists that I'm looking at now is in my head, in my mind. So if you look at the five senses, what are they? They are a process of taking vibrational fields, turning them into electrical signals, passing that to the brain, and the brain then decodes that into a holographic world that we think is outside of us, which actually in this form only exists in our heads. It's very much the same as a television broadcast. In this space now where I'm standing, you've got all the television stations broadcasting to Avebury, and they're unaware of each other and I'm unaware of them. But if I get a television set that is tuned to a certain channel, it will pick one of those up, and suddenly what is what? Nothing becomes television pictures on the screen. The only place that television exists as we understand it, programs and such, is actually on the screen. Everywhere else it's electrical circuits and broadcast frequencies from transmitters. So outside of us, if you like, everything is an energy field. It's an energetic vibrational construct. On another level, it's like a digital mathematical construct, very much like the Matrix and the Matrix movies. Therefore, when you're looking at a shapeshift, say I'm looking at the cameraman now, for instance, I haven't shapeshifted yet, give him timeline. I'm looking at the cameraman now and I see a human body. That only exists in my head after it's been decoded from the energy field that body really is. I tell a story in some of my books to give you an example of what I'm talking about. Some people may have read this, about the guy who was sitting in a chair and he was put into a hypnotic trance by a stage hypnotist. And when he was brought out, just before he was brought out of the trance, he was told that he wouldn't see his daughter in the room when he woke up. And the daughter was put standing in front of him, and he woke up and he's looking into his daughter's belly, and he can't see his daughter because his brain had been manipulated, implanted, not to read that energy field. And because his brain wouldn't read the energy field, the energy field could not manifest as a physical form in front of him. So he didn't see it. He saw everyone else in the room because his brain was not encoded by the hypnotist not to read those fields. So now we come back to shape-shifting. What shape-shifting is not a move between or a transition between a physical human form and a physical reptilian form and then back again. It is a move between two forms of decoding in the brain. If I'm looking at a human body, my brain is decoding that energy field and I see a human body. If that energetic construct shifts, the energetic construct, not the physical form, then my brain will start reading the second energy field that's now moved into the forward position, if you like. And then when that goes back and the human field takes prominence again, my brain will start decoding that. To my reality, what I will see as that happens is a physical form, reptilian form, human form again. And so a shape shift is not a shift between two physical bodies. It is an energetic shift and a shift in how the brain decodes what it is perceiving. And because it's like that, it allows those that understand the whole holographic decoding nature of our reality to have a, and you see stories like this in ancient accounts and myths and legends all the time. It allows you to stand here in the form that you are, say reptilian, and to project around you like an outer field. Now, as long as that is the field that the observer is reading, I could stand here, you know, I could look like, you know, Donald Duck. But you wouldn't be reading Donald Duck. You would be reading the projected field around me, and that would mean that you would see whatever that projected field is there to project. And you come across these stories, like I say all the time, in ancient accounts and myths of what we would call holographic shields around people, so that the real person can't be seen. And given that this whole reality is a hologram anyway, is holographic, where our brain takes these frequency fields and turns it into an apparently three-dimensional reality, it means that those who understand how it all works can interplant within this holographic illusion other holograms which our brain reads and takes to be real. And there's an enormous amount of manipulation goes on that level of implanting holographic fields, which we then read and think are real. And again, once you get to the point where you see the illusory and energetic rather than physical nature of everything, then nothing's impossible anymore. Oh, no, mate. That's impossible. Could never do that. No, not if you are perceiving the world as physical. No, that is impossible. But if you realize it's energetic and only becomes physical when you decode it into a holographic illusion, then suddenly all bets are off in terms of that's impossible, mate, because nothing is. Let's see what else we got here.